Now we continue with this exciting journey into the Sutras. For those who weren't here yesterday, just to let you know that you are allowed to ask questions at any time during this. So if you want to ask questions, raise your hand and we can do so on the go, as I say. Just to make it a bit more interactive, sometimes it's more interactive, people are more kind of more interesting and you're more kind of aware of what's going on now. So yesterday we had a whole day, we were looking at basically the process of meditation, how meditation works. And one of the key things to understand from the suttas about meditation practice is that it is an automatic process. It happens by itself. All you have to do is set like the initial conditions, get the initial conditions right, and then you can just sit back. And the whole thing unfolds very naturally. So meditation is supposed to be a very easy, very relaxing process, where there's nothing really you have to will, nothing you have to do, just allow the whole thing to happen. Very nice, right? Nothing to do, just to sit back and allow things to happen by themselves. So the initial conditions that we need to put in place for meditation to work is basically what is often translated into English as virtue, and it is the Pali word sila. Sila is what we have to put into place. And of course, the Buddhist idea of sila is a very broad thing. It is about how we practice our bodily actions, how we practice our speech. But perhaps most importantly of all, it's also how we practice, how we use our mind. We have to use the mind in the right way. And when you use the mind in the right way, that is when meditation really starts to happen. So what I've been focusing on yesterday is how to learn, how to deal with the mind in such a way that you overcome those things that are obstacles, right? The things that are negative aspects of mind, like anger, and specifically, most important one is actually anger or ill will, and how to overcome that, how to deal with that. So we purify our sila in a very deep sense. And this is one of the things that I have been focusing on, and this is what I'm going to continue to focus on today. So one of the points I was making yesterday towards the end, we're looking at the sutta called the two kinds of thought. And I was saying that from this sutta, it is very clear that the most powerful way of overcoming your defilement is not using any willpower, not forcing yourself not to have the wrong thoughts, but actually using wisdom, using your understanding, reflecting in the right way. And when you reflect in the right way, then it's almost as if these hindrances, these defilements of the mind, they just disappear just like that, because you understand that there is a problem there. So this next sutta is called the removal of thoughts, Majjhimanikaya 20. This is all about how to overcome these defilements and overcome these problems. So I will read out a little bit and then I'll explain to you how, as we go along, what is going on in this, just like what we were doing yesterday. Okay, Majjhimanikaya 20, the removal of thoughts, the Vitakka Santana Sutta in Pali. Thus have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jaitas Grove, another Pindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus, thus, bhikkhus, Venerable Sir, they replied, and the Blessed One said this, bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is pursuing the higher mind, from time to time he should give attention to five signs. What are the five? Okay, so as I was saying yesterday, when the term bhikkhu is used, it doesn't exclude everybody else. Everybody is included in this because the path is the same for everybody. The path is always the Noble Eightfold Path, but everybody has to do the same thing. So when someone is pursuing the higher mind, you may remember this from yesterday, one of the other students also talked about the higher mind, the adi-citta. And the higher mind is, again, you're trying to move to a state of deep meditation, right? Higher mind means samadhi, it means the jhanas quite specifically. So we're pursuing this, trying to achieve some samadhi. Not trying very hard, but we're trying to find a way to get to that point. And to do this, it says here that from time to time, you should give attention to five signs. The word sign here is an unusual word. The Pali word is nimitta, and it's here used in a quite unusual sense. But what it basically means here is that you should give attention to five things, five ways of looking at what is going on. That's really all it means. Just five ways of attending, five ways of looking at the world, five ways of looking at your own mind. This is what this is all about. So the word five signs is a bit perplexing. It doesn't really, it's not very clear what it means, but attending in five ways. So this is what the Buddha says about these five ways of attending. Hear me good, sir. When the bhikkhu is giving attention to some sign, and owing to that sign, there arise in him bad, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, connected with hate, connected with delusion. Then he should give attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome. When he gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, then any evil, unwholesome, or bad, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, they are abandoned in him and subside. I'll just stop there because already there is probably a few things that we need to clarify about this. So it says here when the bhikkhu is giving attention to some sign, that because of that giving attention to that sign, these thoughts, right, unwholesome thoughts connected with this is lobha, dosa, and moha, right? Desire, hate, and delusion. Lobha, dosa, moha. Because he is giving attention to that sign, these unwholesome qualities arise in the mind. So what does it mean to give attention to a sign, right? Again, this is why sometimes reading the sutta is a bit perplexing. You wonder, what does it mean? Giving attention to a sign? Does that mean kind of looking at the traffic signs, or what exactly does it mean there? And of course, if you get angry when you see the traffic signs, that might actually be applicable. So when you get to the red light and you think, oh no, red light, go away, I need a green light, then indeed, it would actually be a sign in that one here. But here, what it means is a very broad category here. And sign, again, is the word, again, is nimitta. And what it actually means is any kind of object that you are looking at, right? Anything which comes in your mind, and when you see that thing in the mind, it gives, as a consequence of seeing that, it gives rise to unwholesome states of lobha, dosa, moha. That is what is meant. Now, it is interesting because what exactly does that mean, looking at an object? Does it mean that that unwholesomeness, the lobha, dosa, moha, is it inherent in that object, right? You see a person, and that person gives rise to upset, right? You don't like this person, you get upset when you see them. Is that because that is actually in that person? Or is it in you? Where is it coming from? What is actually going on here? And what is going on is basically that the quality is not inherent in the object that you are seeing. It is really what you are adding to that object which is going on here. And that is a very good thing, right? Which means, first of all, it means that it's a bit kind of depressing straight away because it means that you have to take responsibility, right? Don't really want to take responsibility. It's the other person's fault. It's a much easier way of looking at things. But it means that you can do something about it. If it is inherent in the other person and you get angry, if they are by nature evil and everybody should be angry with them, then of course it is nothing you can do about that. But if it is about your perception and how you look at the world, how you look at the people, then you can actually do something about it. So it's great, right? This is kind of the Buddhist thing, is that we can take responsibility. We need to take responsibility for our own actions, for how we think, how we perceive the world. And initially, it's scary to take responsibility. It's much easier, I think it's much easier to kind of just pray to God and say, oh God, please look after me. Or some Buddhists that do that with a Buddha, oh Buddha, please look after me. Help me, because you know I'm so weak and I can't really sort this out. But in the end, if you rely on some external thing for your happiness, for your spiritual development, it's not so good, because you don't know what that external force will do, right? You have no idea whether it will really help you or not, or whether it will guide you in the right way. In the end, it's much more secure if we take charge of our own spiritual development. It's kind of scary initially, but actually in the end, it's a much more secure thing to be in charge of it yourself. So this is what this means, that when you give attention to some sign, it just means that the way you are looking at this person, that is what gives rise to the defilement, right? How you are looking, it is coming from you, it is not inherent in the object. So you can change the way you look, and if you change the way you look, then things change dramatically as a consequence. So the three things that are called unwholesome, it has the word evil here. The evil is is a very kind of Christian idea. You know, really, things are really evil. The Pali word is papa, and it basically just means bad. That's really what it means. So bad, unwholesome thoughts. Connected with lobha, dosa, and moha, desire, hate, and delusion. Right? Desire, lobha, greed, right? That sort of thing. Hate, I don't know if hate is perhaps the best translation. It basically means like ill will. Right? Anger, that's really what it means. Hate is a very strong word. And delusion is all the other problems in the mind, all the things that we have in the mind, which kind of are unpleasant, right? Feeling tired, and, you know, meditation, just kind of nodding off, feeling restless. All of these things are aspects of delusion, the moha of the mind. And also when you feel kind of confused, right? One translation of moha is confusion. We're really confused, no idea what's going on. That is also an aspect of these defilements. So whatever gives rise to these defilements, when you look at the sign in a certain way, then that is a problem. So what should you do? Well, if that is happening, then what you should do is you should pay attention to some other sign, right? Connected with what is wholesome. And then those bad, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with ill will, and with confusion or delusion, they are abandoned and subside in him. So what does this mean? What it means is that if you are seeing a person who is making you feel upset, right? This is one of the most difficult things in life, is people, right? Everybody has problems with people. This is just what the way life is. Because we are different, we have different views about things, we perceive the world in different ways, we have different personalities, and there's always problems with people. So when we look at defilement, it's often very useful to focus on people, because it's the most obvious place. So what do we do if a person comes, or a person upsets us because they are being silly, they're being stupid, or whatever, or being deluded, or whatever it is? What can we do? What is the sutta recommending? Now, there's two things you can do. Either you can just ignore that person, right, and just walk in a different direction. You see them coming towards you, and you kind of walk quickly to the left, right, pretending you have some business, down to the left, or whatever. Now, I have to go to the toilet now. Sorry, quickly, rush off to the toilet. So this is one way, avoiding the person. And that is, sometimes that is necessary. Because sometimes the feelings are so strong, right, you can't really do anything about it, and so you avoid it a little bit. And that's fine. Don't feel bad if you are avoiding people. It's perfectly okay. Sometimes we need to protect ourselves, right? Because it's hard otherwise to avoid these things from arising. But that is not the ideal way. The ideal way of dealing with that sort of situation, when you see that negativity towards a person arises, is actually to change your attitude and to reflect in a different way. Look at that person in a way whereby that sign, that negativity, disappears and a positive mindset arises instead. That is the ideal way. So how do you do that? And the way you do that, and as we'll see this in the next sutta as well, which is a very nice sutta about how to overcome resentment and anger and ill will, and how you do that is that you remind yourself that people are complex. Most people you find, they have some bad qualities, but they often have very many good qualities, right? Like all your friends here at the BGF, you know, I'm sure you can find fault with them, right? It's very hard not to find fault with people. You can always find fault with somebody. But there's also so many good qualities, right? Keeping the five precepts. People interested in the sutta. They want to meditate. They want to develop themselves. Wow! You know, very good and very wholesome intentions. So if you remind yourself of that, well, actually these people are really good people. At the very least they're trying, right? They don't always succeed 100%. Nobody succeeds 100% all the time. They are trying for goodness sake. And when you remember the good qualities of the people around you, when you see them do something silly and stupid, you can just forget about it. No, focus back on the good qualities. And straight away, that negativity or that upset that is arising in your mind, it fades away because you remember the bigger picture, which is much more important. So this is how it works, right? This is how you shift. This is what it means when it says giving attention to another side. It just means looking at the object in a different way, seeing it in a different way. But to be able to do this successfully, because sometimes it's very hard to do these things on the spur of the moment, is to allow yourself to remember these things. You know, for example, in the meditation practice, when you're kind of don't have anything in particular to do, or you're doing some kind of routine task at home or whatever it is, and to remind yourself again and again of the good qualities of the people around you. To remind yourself again and again. And when you remind yourself of these things again and again, it makes an impact in your mind. This is what mindfulness is about, right? We're making an impact in our mind. So this becomes a strong perception inside of us. When it becomes a strong perception, it is easy to pull it out when we need it to overcome the negative things. So it's like a shelf of perceptions, and we develop these perceptions. And it's just like going to the supermarket, right? You have the various things, you know, on the shelf, right? And in our Buddhist supermarket, we have a shelf of perceptions. So you have to develop all these perceptions, right? Perception of the kindness of the people in the BDF. This is one perception that's up there. And you have to develop that, and you have to work on it. And as you work on it, and you develop it and make it stronger, you can take it off the shelf when you need it, and apply it in your practice. When is it that you need it? There's two main areas when you need it. One is just in ordinary life, right? In ordinary life, you are people always, that's when you interact the most. And you use it in ordinary life to counteract the negativity that arises. Very powerful to use in ordinary life. And the other time to use it is in your meditation practice, right? You're sitting there, maybe feeling very happy, but suddenly some thought from the past arises. And you think, oh no, I don't want to think about that, right? It destroys the whole meditation, destroys the whole happiness, because it's some kind of unpleasant thing from the past comes into your mind. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah? I'm sure everybody has this kind of experiences. So then you use it in your meditation practice as well. You quickly remind yourself, actually, there is another way of looking at this. I don't have to see it as a negative thing. There is a positive way of looking at this instead. So either then you can shift your attention away from the object, or remember the good qualities in that person. This is how we do this, and it's very powerful, and I will talk more about this later on, because there's a whole sutta that deals with this kind of thing. And in Buddhism, you know, I'm talking about the shelf of perception, right? And on that shelf, you have different types of perception that we can use depending on the context. So sometimes there's a perception about metta, of compassion, sometimes a perception about impermanence, perhaps, sometimes a perception of death, right? All of these things we develop. When we develop them, we have the ability to use them when they are required. And then what happens is that, as it says here, the unwholesome thought subsides, right? It subsides and is abandoned in that person. So it disappears. And this is what I was saying before. You will notice that what we are doing here then, we're not using willpower. We're not saying, oh, I'm really, this is bad. I'm getting this bad thought, right? I better suppress it. My willpower, oh, clench your teeth, right? This is what people sometimes do. We'll see that later on also in this particular sutta. But that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing is we're using what I would call wisdom. We're trying to look at things in a different way. You have developed a different understanding over a long period of time. Then you use your wisdom to place your attention there instead. This is what I was saying yesterday with wisdom. This one minute, I'm exactly, yeah. This is what I was saying yesterday about the idea of wisdom power. Because if you are able to do this shift, then you have to be quite quick. If the thought becomes too consolidated inside of you, it's very hard to shift it. If you can see the negative thought arising here, mindfulness is strong enough, and you quickly remember the good qualities, the bad ideas you have, the bad thought you're having disappears like that, right? This is why wisdom power is so much more powerful than suppressing things. You suppress it, you hold it down, you use willpower. As soon as you get tired, you tire very quickly using willpower. As soon as you get tired and you start letting go, then what happens? The thoughts come back up again. Wisdom power is gone and has disappeared for a long period of time. This is the power of this. Okay, please, yeah. Wait, not good? Yeah. Oh, there
we are.
Okay. Yeah.
One thing. According to the sutta, it appears that we should. Is it right, my view, that we should be looking at the negative signs first?
Negative signs?
The negative, the unwholesome ones. What about if the first thing that comes up is actually the wholesome one?
Great. Wonderful. Then you are already on the right track, you see. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Are we
supposed to look at
the unwholesome? Is it in a
procedural
manner?
No, this is only if the unwholesome happens to arise. You should never look at the unwholesome. Not first the unwholesome, then the wholesome. No, this is not what it means. It just means that because it is our natural mind state, unwholesome things tend to arise. Never deliberately give rise to a negative state. Please. Yeah. No, because there is enough. There are so many negatives happening already. We don't need to do this. Good. Yeah. That's good. Thank you for the question. It's important to get these things clear, right? It's very important. That's good. Yeah. Okay. So let us then. So let us move on to the next one, the same paragraph. So, with the abandoning of them, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness, and stilled. Have you seen this phrase before? Remember this phrase from yesterday? Anybody remember this phrase? Yeah. We saw it twice yesterday, right? Two different sutras that it came up yesterday. Yeah. What does it mean? Remember what it means? It means samadhi, it means jhana, that's basically what it means. So standing internally is santitati, standing together, quieted is sannisivati. It means like sitting down together, right? You're becoming very still. Brought to singleness, ekodihoti, it means being one, quite literally. And still concentrated is samadhavati, which is the same word as samadhi, right? So this is how it works. And you can see here, if you look at this, it's very similar to the way we were talking about things yesterday. Remember yesterday, we said first you overcome the negative thought, right? Then, once you have overcome the negative thought, then you have the positive thought in your mind, right? Or may all beings be happy, you have all these positive thoughts in your mind. And then you overcome the positive thought, and then you go into samadhi. And it's exactly the same thing we're seeing here. You can see how every sutta is consistent. It teaches exactly the same procedure. Overcome the negative, then come to the positive, then leave the positive behind and go into samadhi. So this is from the first sutta I was reading out on the first yesterday, for those of you who weren't here, shows you that the path is a gradual path, a gradual removal of defilements. Just like you're refining gold, you have to refine gold by taking out the coarse defilements first, then the middling defilements, then the refined ones. In exactly the same way with the mind. It's a gradual process. Start with the coarser, then the refined things, and then the mind is ready for samadhi as a consequence. So the results are so powerful, right? Remember that when we talk about samadhi, we're talking about something very, very valuable, something that the Buddha Sutta compares to gold, something that can give you immense happiness in life. In fact, real samadhi is very profound. It is so powerful that it feels like you have touched the meaning of life itself. That's what it feels like. Because for the first time in your life, you have everything that you wish for, everything that you ever desire comes to you. You feel completely fulfilled. remember that one of the problems in life is that when we run around in the world, when we desire things, when we have craving, it's like something is missing inside of us, right? The desire is about, I need this, otherwise I don't feel fulfilled. And so craving is like a hole inside of you, like something is missing inside of you. And when you get to samadhi, for the first time in your life, that hole is no longer there. You feel absolutely complete. You feel fully satisfied. You are incredibly happy. You just, wow, this is it. I've discovered the answer to the meaning of life. This is how powerful samadhi is. Please, yes.
Does it mean that samadhi is the state where you actually also have a feeling of equanimity, where there's neither unwholesome or wholesome?
Yes, you have a feeling of equanimity, precisely. It is wholesome, it's a naturally wholesome state, but you're not really intending towards the wholesome, it just is wholesome by its very nature. It's different from thinking, oh, may all beings be happy. You just have a natural feeling in your heart, may all beings be happy, right? It's not something you're thinking about. Yeah.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, unwholesome state of mind brings about anger, resentment, aversion.
Yeah.
Wholesome states of mind brings about also some negative emotions like greed, I want more, I like it, I cling.
No, that would not be right, because that craving itself is actually an unwholesome state of mind. So remember yesterday, the Buddha said he divides thinking into two categories. On the one side, he puts the craving, the anger, the cruelty, the harming. On the other side is the metta, the compassion, and the renunciation. So really, the idea of state of mind is one of renunciation. But it's very hard to do that. It's a very kind of profound thing to have thoughts about renunciation. What it means like, oh, I'm so happy just to give up things, right? Don't want to have any relationships, don't want to have anything like that. I just want to be by myself. Difficult, right? This is very hard. And that's why I say that the focus, especially in lay life, should be on overcoming the negative, the anger, and the harming, and the cruelty, that sort of thing. Overcoming a sensual desire is much more profound. And even for a monastic, it's very difficult sometimes. But the ideal is you're sitting in your little cutie in the forest, and you're just so happy to be away from everybody, right? Don't have anything to do with relationships or anything like that. Wow, it is so blissful to be here. And the amazing thing is that when you have that sense of being so content being by yourself, when you are with people, you're also happy. This is the weird thing. It's like, it sounds like if you are so happy about being by yourself, then when you get with people, you get really grumpy, right? It isn't like that. Because you're happy on your own, you're also happy around people. If you're happy around people, you tend also to be happy by yourself. These things go together.
Sorry, I may have used the wrong term about wholesome state. Just now the example about daily life. We resent someone and we keep trying to remember the good things that the person did to us. Sometimes it may even end up in me craving for that person to do more good to me. That's unwholesome, but that is, I mean, when, let's say I have anger towards someone, and it's actually negative actions from the someone, then I try to turn it around by remembering the positive things that person did. And then it will come to a point where then suddenly there is a comparison, oh, the person could have done it, this good thing better. It goes off, you know what I mean? Then it becomes an unwholesome state. So how do we manage that?
If you find that positive thing that you were looking at before doesn't work anymore, then you have to find other positive things, right? If you can't find anything positive, then you have to use compassion. You can always, the fallback position is always compassion. If somebody is, and we'll see this in the next sutta, if somebody is absolutely bad, right, or can't see anything good in this person, compassion is always available for you. Because somebody who really is bad, they are hurting themselves more than anybody else. They're creating really bad karma for themselves, and they will have a very difficult life as a consequence. Difficult rebirth as well. If somebody is hurting themselves, how can you not have compassion? You have to have compassion, right? And the reason why they're hurting themselves is because they are silly, they are deluded, they don't understand what's going on. A person who is so deluded that they're hurting themselves, compassion is the only natural and the right answer.
You mentioned that when we give the compassion, then we start to think, oh, this person is deluded. Then it becomes an unwholesome state?
No, it's not unwholesome because sometimes it's true. The other person is deluded. We are also deluded, right?
Yes. Does that mean the conceit which we are not aware of?
Okay,
like,
so,
I'm above that person?
That was what I was trying to describe. Okay. What you have to remember here is that you are also deluded, right? So the other person is deluded, okay, I have the same problem, right? We all in the same boat, you all have the same problem. So don't get conceited about it. You just understand that in this situation, because the other person is acting unskillfully, in this situation they are deluded. In other situations, I'm deluded, right? So because of that, it never becomes a matter of judgment or superiority or anything like that. It's just an understanding. This is the nature of humanity. Nature of people is like this. Okay? So but don't try not to raise the bar too high. Try not to resolve all the problems in one go, because after a while, your mind just spins and you don't really know what to do. And then do one thing at a time, right? Try that. And then take the next step, right? And then one step at a time. So even if you feel a little bit conceited, okay, so be it. Next round, next month, you deal with the conceit, right? And then gradually you move ahead like that. Thank you for those questions, brother. They're all very good questions. That's great. And that kind of thing that everybody struggles with to some extent. Okay, so that is the next time is the simile, and all of these five things we're going to look at here, they all have nice similes connected with them, and the similes make it very clear what is going on there. So when, with the abandoning of them, I was saying before, his mind goes into samadhi, just as a skilled carpenter or his apprentice might knock out, remove, or extract the coarse peg by means of a fine peg. So too, when the bhikkhu gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness, and stilled. So the idea here, you can see the idea of pegs, right? The negative thought is a coarse peg. It's a really big, ugly peg, and you want to get rid of it so you can have a smooth and nice surface. So to get rid of that big, bad peg, you use a small peg. And of course, the point here is that the small peg is also a peg. It's not, ideally, you don't want to have any pegs at all. But you use the small peg to get the big one out. So again, this idea of gradualness, understanding the gradual progress here is very important. And then when the small one takes the place of the big one, then you get rid of the small one, and then you go into samadhi. So gradual practice, gradual is the right way. Okay. That is the first one, the first of these five. Then we can move on to the second one. If, while he is giving attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, there still arise in him bad, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion, then he should examine the danger in those thoughts thus. Right, so this is maybe a little bit of the answer to some of the questions that you had before, that if you still have bad, then you bad thoughts, you have a different strategy for dealing with that. So you understand the danger, right? And that this is what you think. These thoughts are unwholesome. Or you could translate this as unskillful, if you like. The Pali word is akusala, and unskillful is a common translation. They are reprehensible. The Pali word is sabanja, which means they are blameworthy, right? They are faulty. They are false. Connected to these thoughts. So they are blameworthy. And they are dukkha, vipaka. Dukkha vipaka means the result in suffering. It's like kamma vipaka. And so this you may recognize from yesterday. Yesterday we were talking all about seeing the danger in thoughts. Remember that? We're talking about it leading to my own affliction, to the affliction of others, the affliction of both, leading to the cessation of wisdom, right? Panya, nirodhika. leading to problems and leading away from Nirvana, talking about yesterday. This is exactly the same kind of reflection we are doing here. So this is really going into wisdom territory in a very deep sense. Because here you understand that these thoughts actually are really bad. It's bad news, and all they do is lead to suffering. Remember the simile I was talking about yesterday about the hot plate in the house, right? You don't need to think, should I remove my hand if you touch a really hot plate by accident? You just remove it straight away. It's an automatic reaction. You don't even have to decide to do it. It just happens by itself. In exactly the same way, if you are able to develop your mind to the point that you understand that ill will is actually dangerous, it leads to suffering to everybody all the way around you. Your mind just withdraws all by itself because you understand that. And to be able to do that again, you have to reflect on it again and again. Understand why it is so problematic, right? Why it leads to so many negative things. One of the ways of doing that is simply to look into your mind. What does it feel like to be angry? What are the immediate consequences for yourself? And I don't know about you, but sometimes when I have a bad thought about somebody else, I straight away, I feel yucky. I feel like my energy goes down, right? My sense of mindfulness goes down. My sense of happiness drops. Everything kind of goes down. And that is what I would call the karma. They talk about three types of karma in the suttas. Karma that is in this very life, the karma with the next life, and the karma with lives even beyond that. So what is the karma in this very life? And the karma that is in this very life is precisely this. And when you do something bad here and now, you feel what your mind feels like when you have a bad thought. You can feel the energy being drained, the happiness being drained, the mindfulness disappearing. Then you are actually experiencing the karma vipaka right now of that negative mind state. Very simple, right? And this is how you can actually understand karma in this very life, how it works. So once you see that, you feel, well, it's actually quite scary, right? I'm kind of holding myself down. My happiness is disappearing because of this. You can see it very immediately. And of course, the more negative thoughts you have, if you keep on building all these negative thoughts, you are just accumulating more and more of the negativity, having less and less energy, less and less happiness in your life. And you can see where that is heading. And remember, for every negative thought you have, you are creating a bad habit. So there's more likely you will have a negative thought also in the future. Right? Why are we having negative thoughts anyway? Because we've had them in the past life, going back to almost to infinity. So this now is the opportunity. If you don't do anything now, you will continue with those negative thoughts down the line, into future lives, and who knows where it's going to lead you. It can lead to very unpleasant things if you just allow these things to get out of control. So by reflecting like this, you feel, boom, I can't really afford to be angry. I can't afford to have these negative thoughts. It's too dangerous. I need to withdraw from this. I need to find ways, skillful ways of learning how to look at things in a different way. And it can be done, right? The Buddha says it actually isn't that hard. If you have the perseverance, if you have the commitment, you will be able to do this. But you really have just to commit yourself properly, and then it will happen. This is how you have to think. And then what happens? And once you start to see the danger and the suffering in this, when he examines the danger in those thoughts, then any bad, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, with ill will, and with delusion are abandoned in him and subside. And again, when they are abandoned, his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness and stilled. And now comes the amazing simile. This is one of those really powerful similes. The sutta has some incredibly powerful similes. And this is one of those. And it gives you some idea of how the Buddha looks at these negative thoughts. Just as a man or a woman, young, youthful, fond of adornments or ornaments, would be horrified, humiliated, and disgusted if the carcass, right, the dead carcass of a snake or dog or a human being were hung around his or her neck. So too, when a bhikkhu examines the danger in those thoughts, his mind becomes steadied internally, quiet and brought to singleness and stillness. Right? This is a very powerful stuff. Imagine having a dead dog around your neck, right? Rotting away, kind of, oh, that really is disgusting. How long would you keep that dog around your neck? Not very long, right? You get rid of it as quickly as you possibly could, because it is absolutely disgusting. So, this is the point. How can you understand this? How is it possible to kind of grasp that these thoughts are that bad? I mean, if you really understood they were that bad, you just get rid of them straight away. But we can't, right? We're still seeing some happiness in those thoughts. We're still seeing that there's something in those thoughts which is good for us. We think anger sometimes is necessary, right? They're not behaving in the right way. I've got to tell them off, to tell them what to do. A little bit of anger, yeah, that will kind of just motivate them, right? In the right way. Or sometimes I hear from people who like to kind of, you know, do things for social causes, social justice or whatever. They're kind of going out and demonstrating in the streets, that kind of stuff, you know. And they say, oh yeah, you know, you hear this as a monk. Anger is good because anger gives you energy. Right? Is that a good idea? You get energy from anger? And there's lots of problems with that idea that anger gives you energy. It's true. If you get angry, a little bit angry, it does give you some energy boost straight away, right? I mean, we all know that. But that is very short term. After the energy boost has disappeared, afterwards you feel more tired than you did before. That anger actually, in the long term, it drains your energy. It may give you a short term boost, but the long term is actually much, much worse. It drains your energy. This is the first thing. The second thing, of course, if you really want to be effective, if you want to do things for social causes, if you want to kind of, you know, march in the streets like people do sometimes, especially in the West, they're much more kind of keen on that sort of stuff, you know, write to the government, marching in the streets, you know, waving flags or whatever. That's fine, I don't have a problem with that, but if you want to do that, do it with kindness, do it with in the right way. If you are angry when you do that, it means your idea of the situation is distorted. It means that you are likely to end up being violent, right, and doing all kinds of bad things. Because that is what anger does to you, it distorts the situation. So, it's always a bad thing. From a Buddhist point of view, you never see things according to reality. Your view is always distorted about everything. And because of that, it is never really useful. So even for those people, I say, think carefully about this. Because in the long run, your anger is going to come back to you. It's going to haunt you. It's going to give you lots of trouble. Even though you are able to help, like, you know, with animal rights or whatever cause that you are looking out for, even though you're able maybe to do a little bit of that one, in the end, it's not going to make you feel all that good because you're coming from the wrong place. So this is the sort of thing. So once you get all of these things, get a clear idea of the danger in this, then that is how you feel. This is the position of the Buddha, understanding it as being that powerful that it actually is equivalent to having the dead carcass or something hung around your neck. The more you reflect on this, the more you start to understand that this is the case, the more powerful will be your ability to abandon these thoughts. So remember, reflection here is so important, understanding why it is a problem. With anger and with harming, it is not too difficult to understand it. But the Buddha said that ultimately, even with lobha, even with greed, we have to understand that there is this problem. And that, of course, is more difficult. Anyway, so I will stop there because we have come to the end of the first session. We'll have a short break here, and then we will continue afterwards. So see you in 15 minutes.